JP.
Hi, Quentin. How's it going?
Jet lagged, but alive and well.
Good.
Thank you very much for coming in and spending some time with us.
Thanks for your invite.
JP from BP, two acronyms to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So Jean-Paul from, actually BP is just BP now.
It's just BP, yeah.
There's
nothing behind it.
None of the old stuff.
Just BP. Yeah.
And today, I mean, BP is moving very fast in the world of renewables. And we're going to talk about smart grids, renewables, investments, open energy and the acquisition, hopefully, and other stuff.
Yeah.
But firstly, JP, we've known each other. I think we spent, I think the longest time we ever spent together was getting a 4-hour train down to Plymouth and back when
exactly.
we were at Zenobē in 2018. And I was at Kiwi Power and we were building a behind the meter Tesla battery.
Yeah.
And you were Zenobē, were all over it. And,
exactly.
And since then you've done a lot of stuff. So who are you and why are you here?
Yeah, so who am I? Engineer by background, civil mechanical engineer. I worked offshore in seismic exploration for a few years, decided I wanted to transition myself from oil and gas to something clean.
Who was that with?
That was with Schlumberger, yeah. And then I decided I wanted to do something a little bit different, so I came to London, did a master's, ended up working for a startup at the time called Cambourne Energy Storage, looking at, I think they did the first 500 kilowatt Tesla battery in Europe.
This is Cambourne Capital,
yeah,
the original OGs.
Exactly.
Right?
So I started there, then moved over to Zenobē, spent a little bit at Zenobē, then Ørsted. I think you had Bridget on. So I worked a lot with Bridget.
We love Bridget.
Yeah, working a lot on system integration, adding a lot of value around, you know, storage and other elements around that. And since January this year, how time flies, I am with BP in trading and shipping.
Cool. And yeah. Based in London?
Based in London, Canary Wharf.
And so what does BP trading and shipping do? Let me guess.
We trade and we ship.
We trade and we ship. Trading what, though?
It's, you know, the commodities that BP takes from the upstream, delivers to the downstream as well. So we're essentially mid-market, you could say. We take our own molecules, our own commodities, and we also take third parties and kind of market those to either downstream for our own self or for third parties. So, you know, I can't really speak about the other kind of molecules, but, you know, with electrons, where I sit in European power, it's all about the, you know, bringing more power volume onto our books and providing that downstream. So, you know, that could be through typical PPAs, or through kind of what we're doing now in energy storage.
So so BP is a buyer of power from renewable generators, is that right? So
exactly.
PPAs, and also an owner of these kind of assets too?
So as you know, maybe I'll take a step back and, you know, BP has been on a big journey of reinventing itself as well. 2 years ago, Bernard Looney started a whole reinvent process where BP is becoming an integrated energy company from what it was in the past. And one of the key kind of, there's three pillars, and two of those are really around, one of them's around renewables growth, zero carbon growth, and everything around that. So we've won a couple of offshore wind bids in the UK. So we're going to have really big wind capacity coming online.
How big are they, do you know?
Oh, not sure off the top of my head, but, you know, gigawatt range. I think this year we have 5.8 gigawatts in kind of future offshore wind projects worldwide. Some of these are joint ventures, you know, I think in the UK it's with EnBW, in Germany, and sorry, in the US it's with Equinor. We put in a bid in the Netherlands, which we're waiting results soon. So I think, it's, you know, there's going to be a massive build out from offshore wind in BP's portfolio. And then what we need to see is, you know, as TNS, we're going to be off taking a lot of this volume.
TNS being?
Trading and shipping.
Trading and shipping.
Yeah. So I think it's super
like
interesting
like
time.
Trading.
And
trading. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like Toys R Us kind of style.
Yeah, yeah. Toys
Very
R Us.
BP.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's super exciting. Like the whole transition, we're going to have our own capacity, and of course, there's, you know, I think publicly mentioned lots of things around, you know, the Asian Renewable Hub, I think it's called, in Australia, which is a huge project. So super exciting, I must say. Like really exciting.
I've got to say, from a third party watching on, so we're not going to get into the politics right now. But for oil, big oil, there's been it's tricky. There are so many billions of dollars that are deployed into fossil fuel related assets. And then for a big oil company to transfer all of those into renewables, there are different speeds you can do that and there are different ways you can do that. But of all the big oil companies, I think some of the commitments that BP is making are pretty wild.
Yeah.
And show, yeah, I mean, all big oil gets a bad name for loads of different reasons. But from I think from my perspective, you know, it's pretty impressive how fast it's happening. Of course, it can go faster, right?
Yeah.
And it would be great for the world if it went faster. But also, there is a sort of there is a natural timing to this. There's almost a shortage of assets to put it into, right? You haven't built all this stuff yet. Completely so where agree. Do you put it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to avoid pointing the finger on this podcast and do the opposite and say there's some incredible work happening. And just seeing how many renewables people are going to work at these companies
is
impressive.
So for me, like when you consider my journey, I was oil and gas initially, didn't really want to be there. At the time, working offshore was not very pleasurable. So then I moved into, let's say, Ørsted, which is a darling of that community, and rightly so. Really huge ambitions, transitioned, massive offshore wind player.
I think of Ørsted a bit like the Netflix of oil and gas, right? Because they were like a, you know, the DVD by post business and just went, nope, not doing that anymore. No. It's all going to be digital. And
exactly.
Other businesses, that was such a big risk and it could not have paid off.
Exactly.
You only see the upside.
And so for me, being in Ørsted, I looked at BP and I saw the reinvent and I was like, oh, that's really exciting. Look, they're putting their money where their mouth is. Like really ambitious targets, real at scale. And I was like, I kind of want to be part of that. And so when the opportunity came, I was like, actually, I want to be at the ground floor a little bit. And ideally, as you're kind of saying, is I want to help make it faster. I feel like the better I do my job, the more clean, green electrons I can bring on board, the faster BP will transition. So it's a bit of a, it's really a passionate thing for me. Like, I really want to help drive this transition and help drive the reinvent process at BP.
And you guys have also got the Light Source partnership, right?
We do, yeah.
I don't know if you don't want to talk about that, but is it 50-50?
I think so, yeah. So I don't work that closely with Light Source themselves, but of course, I think they're the leading solar developer in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
They're growing massively. So it's super exciting to have that part, those joint venture opportunities as well. Like BP is doing so much at scale, maybe not completely independently, like the joint ventures in offshore wind, but really using the opportunity and any kind of structure, company structure to grow that ambition. So, you know, joint ventures is a great way of doing it, sharing that risk and the opportunities.
And the other big difference I've noticed is senior managers at, so the big oil that's choosing to change, and that's not everybody, unfortunately, but a big oil that is making commitments, it's now right from the top.
Yep.
Rather than having a little side project that's renewables or it's like a, this is a, you know, change or die principle, which is big. Anyway, enough about that. Let's talk, so what kind of stuff is BP working on at the moment? So companies you're invested in, projects you're working on, you know, what does reinvention look like?
Yeah. So I think reinvention has three core pillars, and it's I'm going to misphrase some of the strategy, I think, from the top of my head, but it's the advantage hydrocarbons, one of them. So instead of going into every market trying to look for hydrocarbons, it's going to the ones which actually deliver the best shareholder value, but also low emissions, because there's a goal by 2030 to lower emissions in the, kind of a hydrocarbon upstream business. But again,
when we say hydrocarbons, we mean oil and gas, right?
Exactly, yeah. So I don't sit in that team, so this is a little bit away from my comfort zone there. But then on the other side, we have two pillars which are really interesting to me, which are the growth in low carbon generation, and then the other side, which is convenience and mobility. So the growth in low carbon generation is what I mentioned earlier around massive growth in offshore wind across our core markets. I think publicly out there is joint ventures in the US, as I mentioned, the UK, Netherlands, I think even in Japan. So really scaling up the offshore wind, because I think that goes really hand in hand with, you know, offshore experience in general. Then you have the kind of solar development with Light Source, but I think standalone solar within BP also in some certain markets. Then you have a convenience and mobility, which is like the Pulse network, which is really like, it's one of the fastest growing EV networks in Europe.
These are chargers, right? EV chargers.
Yeah. And like rapid EV chargers as well, which is core to the strategy of Pulse. And I think in the BP Aral network in Germany is one of the it's the largest in Germany, I believe. So that adds really interesting kind of component of growth of demand and electrification of a massive sector, which is transport. So
convenience and mobility.
Yes.
That's nice. I like the word convenience.
Yeah.
What else comes under convenience?
So our convenience offering. So when you stop at a petrol station, you have an M&S.
Oh, like convenience stores.
Literally. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you have you go to a petrol station and we have a partnership with Marks and Spencer's to have nice products there. Because
so much better than the Wild Bean Cafe, can I say?
Really?
Yeah.
Wild Bean Cafe is part of that.
No, yeah, I know, but just when you pull up to a BP and they've got, the ultimate prawn sandwich, it's a big favorite in our family.
There you go.
When you pull up to a BP to fill up the car and it's so much better than a Wild Bean. So much better than a pasty. Anyway, sorry, convenience and mobility.
Yeah. And so with EVs, obviously, even if you have rapid charging, you're still going to be at a location for, 15, 20 minutes if you want a decent amount of charge. So having a nice time or, a convenience offering there that is suitable makes sense.
It's like a charging experience.
Exactly. And the whole thing is customer satisfaction. Charge fast with rapid charging. Have the convenience there as well. So, and those aside that from the trading and shipping, the TNS side, I find very interesting because we have the growth in supply and then we have the growth in demand. And for TNS and trading and shipping, sat in the middle, that's a really interesting opportunity in supplying and taking those electrons.
And you guys, so the trading and shipping bit, mm-hmm. Do you do trading and shipping with all other businesses in global markets, I assume, not just between your supply and demand bits of the business, those two pillars?
Yeah.
So you'll be hedging out contracts and doing all the big stuff as well.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But what a traditional kind of trading organization would do as well. But I think, all of these originate from doing helping your internal business first and then looking for also other opportunities.
Cool.
Yeah.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because it gets quite a lot of airtime, and particularly working in a company, a startup in the space, mm-hmm. is Launchpad.
Yes.
Launchpad BP Launchpad or Launchpad BP? I'm not really sure which way around it is.
Launchpad BP.
Launchpad
I think.
BP. Yeah. So what's that about?
So I think BP has always taken an interest in smaller companies and how you could integrate them and use them to deliver on our strategy, our the greater corporate strategy. And I think BP Launchpad, I'm not sat there again, so I can't go into exactly their strategy and everything they're doing. But let's say we'll use Open Energy as an example. Open Energy is an interesting company that's been around for a while, and they see an opportunity to use the skills and expertise and IP that a company like that has to help enable us to meet our greater strategy. So again, renewables growth or convenience and mobility side. So if you can create an area where you can incubate some interesting companies, bring them in, but maybe don't drown them with the whole BP process, which, rightfully, a company like BP has lots and lots of processes for a reason. But sometimes with a smaller company, that can stifle innovation, can stifle that creativity that they'd need to scale up.
Definitely.
So having a Launchpad BP helps protect them and incubate them to a point where either they're integrated or they go off by themselves.
Well, yeah, let's just touch on integration for a second, because I think, I've worked on both sides. I was mm-hmm. at Centrica, and Centrica bought some businesses. They bought Restore and some other folks. And then when I was at Kiwi Power, there was the Engie transaction. So Engie bought, just before I left, the majority stake in Kiwi. And that ended up being fully integrated.
Yeah.
And integrating small, I know this isn't what we came to talk about, but integrating small startups or startups into big, big businesses mm-hmm. is really hard to do because it's a people problem more than anything. So how does that work? For example, you mentioned Open Energy there.
Yeah.
Open Energy, which is the demand side response, lots of battery optimization, a bit of a mm-hmm. darling really of the industry.
Yeah.
How is BP thinking about integrating Open Energy, and how do you work together?
Yeah, so I think there's obviously a process of the, let's say, system integration is one. How can we deliver a joint product offering? That's one thing. Then, of course, as you rightly said, the people element is super important. And I think the interesting thing about Launchpad BP what Launchpad BP does with Open Energy, for example, and what, let's say, we do in BP, is that we're trying to integrate in a way that they're still maintained in kind of this innovation area. They're in a different office to us in some ways, from trading and shipping. So they can still keep up some of that startup mentality and that innovation while still being part of a greater BP. And then vice versa, we can use the innovation side. And I think it all starts with communication and collaboration and understanding. They're very knowledgeable in their area. So we're not over here to kind of come in and tell them what to do. We can learn a lot from them. And the way, let's say, that Open Energy is working with trading and shipping specifically is around close collaboration. They come over to our offices. We go over to theirs. We have weekly meetings with each other. But essentially, they're still running somewhat independently and not being, let's say, somewhat smothered by the BP process. Mm. So I think it creates a very good equal relationship in that everyone is still playing to their strengths. Everyone is still using, or everyone still has their own culture and values, but we're still kind of assimilating slowly between the two.
Yeah, the problem comes, I'm not going to just talk about the problems. There's always benefits, right? But the problems come when you have like one person in the startup and one person in the main business that both do the same job, right? Yeah. And then they both do them slightly differently. And at some point, someone puts them together and goes, right, you two work together.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's difficult. That said, there are a lot of efficiencies.
Yeah.
Although in mergers, often efficiencies means something else. But hopefully that doesn't happen most of the time.
I think in this case, it doesn't, because let's say the people who are in Open Energy have a specific skill set. We have a specific skill set in trading and shipping. Why would we acquire a company and then get rid of that skill set in some ways?
Yeah.
So I think we're complementary. So let's say I'm a what you call a power originator or a new markets originator is my official title. And I have a certain set of skills, which I was hired for, and a certain set of kind of responsibilities. When I look at my counterparts in Open Energy, they have a slightly different set of skills, different responsibilities. So we complement each other and we work together to try and deliver the most value between the two of us. So I think it's understanding that everyone has their place and how we can work together has been key to how we work. So I think it's working personally.
I'm sure it is. Anyway, we went down a rabbit hole there. Coming back to batteries. So what is BP's strategy for batteries?
So we are, let's say, an anchor member of the Long Duration Energy Storage Council, because we do see the value in flexibility. You know, I think you've probably had people on your podcast before talking at length around the value of flexibility in, you know, a variable renewable energy world with everyone wanting baseload power. So there's a fundamental mismatch there.
Yeah.
So having flexibility is super key. So energy storage falls very neatly under that bracket of flexibility. So I think there is a recognition of the value of it. And I think that recognition comes through, you know, what trading and shipping is doing and I'm doing, looking at battery storage opportunities in the market from third parties. Whether we go into, you know, ownership, I couldn't tell you just yet.
So will you guys, do you guys provide an optimization service?
We do. So we do. I think that's why we have, you know, I've mentioned Open Energy quite a few times. We work closely on them because they provide the optimization service to our route to market. So we're a joint proposition in that.
So they're the tech and the optimization and the control bit.
Exactly.
And you guys are the market access, the big balance
sheet,
all that good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you guys are working together pretty closely, yeah?
That's it, yeah. I was just at Open Energy's office before coming here. They're at our office. I think most of them are at our office today in Canary Wharf.
Cool.
So we're working really quite closely together.
And what about... So beyond batteries, what are BP's other bets on the energy transition? We talked about generating assets, but what are the other big things that BP believes or is betting on?
Well, hydrogen, for one. I think our stated ambition is to have 10% of the hydrogen market in our core markets. Considering our core markets are some of the core markets in the world, you could imagine that's a big bet. And, you know, I think hydrogen...
So what does that mean? Does that mean 10% of the electrolyte the production, or does
TBC exactly the details.
10% of 10%, like transmission, distribution, production, supply, everything. That's a bigger 10%.
It's a bigger 10%. Maybe production is one, but certainly it's a big ambition. Either way you look at it, if it's supply, if it's production, if it's anything, I think it's a huge ambition, and it kind of dovetails really well with the old oil and gas business, you could say. It's another molecule that needs to be transported. It needs to be shipped. It needs to be stored. It needs to be produced. it needs to be produced in a clean, low carbon way, which offshore wind helps with that. So I think it's one that plays to a lot of strengths. And then, of course, there's the EV side. And the one I said earlier around being an anchor member of Long Duration Energy Storage Council, I think is quite certainly an interesting one.
It's nuts, right? Because a lot of the future energy system technologies are offshore, right? Yeah. Because the world will be dominated by offshore wind, I believe, anyway. And the amount of build-out we need for that is so big that we're going to have to go deep in deep waters.
Yeah.
And a lot of the expertise in operating in deep waters is in the oil and gas industry.
Exactly.
So there is a huge crossover there. Actually, going back to what you said right at the start of this podcast, you worked at Schlumberger offshore.
I did, yeah.
What were you doing offshore with Schlumberger? That sounds very exciting.
Yeah, so I was in seismic exploration. So I was spending, I think the longest trip was 7 weeks, but on average 5 weeks at a time offshore. Working for companies like BP and others, doing reservoir monitoring or exploration. So looking for those hydrocarbon deposits, which is really exciting, you know, straight out of uni, put on a boat, sent off to weird and wild corners of the world.
What sort of weird and wild corners?
Like Newfoundland in Canada, you know, Gulf of Mexico, of course, quite a few times, offshore Scotland. The Shetland Islands and others. So around, I'd say.
There's a whole range of outfits you need for those.
Oh yeah. You go from working in Singapore to working in Northern Canada. It's quite something.
Yeah, it sounds like quite the adventure. Anyway, coming back to what BP's up to. Yeah. So you're involved with long duration energy storage. And how is BP thinking about how you're going to deploy that? Because at the moment it's quite uncertain around where that fits and
exactly
how it all looks.
So, I think it's very clear that the world needs to find a solution to the variability of renewable energy. And batteries are a key part of that, but they're the first step. So I think part of being kind of an anchor member of Long Duration Energy Storage Council is to be part of this community of other companies, either OEMs, so like the original equipment manufacturers who help build this new innovative technology, or being part of the people who will probably purchase and develop and build out. It's really interesting to be part of these forums because I don't think anyone knows yet how it's going to work. Because if you were to build a long duration energy storage project now, it wouldn't be in the money.
You'd lose a lot of money.
You'd lose a lot of money unless you have a small scale project that has innovation funding. So I think trying to commercially deploy these longer duration energy storage technologies is a really interesting challenge. And whoever cracks that will have the ability to deliver what a lot of people want in the market, which is baseload green power, or like 24/7 power as like the Googles and others in the world want. So I think, in my view, being an anchor member of such an organization is crucial to start to learn, to upskill, to understand how we do this. And I think for the UK government has seen that long duration storage is important. They have had the innovation funding as well. So I think we're all on a path that way, but BP doesn't have a view. I don't think the Long Duration Energy Storage Council has a view.
It all comes down, how do you make this?
How do you make the money?
Right?
It always comes
back
to that.
Come from?
Exactly.
It's tricky. But then again, you know, in traditional long duration energy storage schemes, so beyond pump storage, so beyond Norwegian and those folks.
Exactly.
Seasonal storage is currently done by, for example, Centrica's Rough storage facility offshore, which is about to be subsidized by the government. Rightly so, right? Because you can see why they're not investing in it, because the money's not there. So
exactly.
There is an argument to be made that long-duration energy storage is going to have to be subsidized one way or another. Unless you completely redesign the markets over a longer time frame, which I just don't think is going to happen.
Yeah, it's tough, I think so. But it has to happen, as you're saying, for security supply reasons, which is the fundamental kind of, a fundamental regulatory legislative reason behind, you know, some of the targets National Grid ESO has. It is delivering security supply. And if we want a zero thermal, zero carbon system, we need long duration energy storage. And I think what you're talking about earlier around capabilities in BP, let's say, for example, you got compressed air energy storage, which requires either salt caverns or reservoirs. That sounds a lot like the traditional hydrocarbon business, in my view. And so when you start to look at that, I think companies like BP have the skill, but where's the money?
But I'm an electrical engineer, and people who are used to dealing with pipes will do anything to keep on dealing with pipes, right?
It's very true.
But I believe the future's probably closer to solid state. But we'll see.
But there's hydrogen storage as well.
There is hydrogen storage.
So
yeah,
I think that it is the smallest molecule. There is a lot of problem trying to store it. So when you look at the renewables build out, and you look at the excess capacity on a really windy, sunny day, those electrons should not be lost.
Agreed, yes.
They should be put into something. If that's hydrogen, solid state, or it's probably going to be a combination of everything, as I think I always come to the conclusion, there's never a silver bullet. It is a combination of technologies.
Apart from gravity, it's not going to go into gravity storage.
It's not going to go into
gravity, guys. Yeah. It didn't work out.
I'm not so sure about that one as well. But like compressed energy storage, I think makes sense. Yeah. And those type of storages make sense.
Yeah. It's funny, actually. It feels very much like the life of Brian, People's Front of Judea, when we start dissing other technologies in storage, because we're all kind of going in the same direction. Yeah, but there are some, in my view, fairly silly ones. So now's the opportunity to talk about something you want to talk about, because I've asked you lots of questions here. What about anything you want to talk about that BP's working on that you think is really cool, or you want to plug?
So I plugged it a little bit already, the Open Energy BP partnership and batteries. I think it makes sense. You know, Open Energy is a very well-respected company that's been in the market a while. People know it. It has the capabilities. It has the tech. And I think bringing in the BP side to it really enhances what they've already have. And so I'm really excited to kind of work with Open Energy and bring that to market and seeing what we can do. And, you know, from my point of view as well, from the BP's point of view, I really like, you know, we're looking at the new core markets also for Europe. So I sit in European power. So, you know, UK, part of Europe sometimes. The rest of the time, you know, Germany, Spain, all of these markets are developing, moving super quick, building out renewables. And then they have the issues around the dispatchability of it and everything. So I think from my point of view, going in and delivering on these markets is really exciting. And BP has a capability to do it, has a scale, has the ambition. So
while you're talking there, it sounds like there's a party going on.
It does,
behind us. It's not as good as this party, that's for sure. But there's something going on. All right, cool. The last thing I want to say is we're interested to see, there's been all these big commitments, right, about divestment from fossil into renewables. And I guess what I'm excited to see is the money go where the mouth is, right? And that's why we need people like you working at BP to make it happen, and all the other folks who are moving from renewables into making this transition happen.
Exactly.
And I really hope it does. Fingers crossed. we just got to find enough assets to deploy into it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, I think one of the biggest issues is grid connections, planning. There's a lot of a lot of red tape and a lot of issues that don't allow this to happen at scale.
All right, JP, thanks very much for coming on to the pod. If you're listening to this, please do hit subscribe, and you'll make Izzy the producer very, very happy. And see you next time. Thanks very much.
Thank you.